Mid-mornings with Lee Chambers.
And sitting opposite me is Anna from Love Your Doorstep. Hello, Anna.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Oh, nice to have you here. And Love Your Doorstep, relatively newly set up in Cambridge, is that right?
Yeah, we've been going just over 4 weeks now. Yeah.
And so what is it? Describe
okay,
it.
Well, it's a community website with a business. Okay, so very transparent about the fact that we have a business with it as well. The idea is that sort of from an altruistic point of view, we really try and benefit the community by offering a platform for people to come on and ask questions, get support from each other. So it could be anything from I've lost my dog to we had one yesterday. I desperately need a plumber my child needs something to do over the summer holidays. Please, can you help me? So over the last 4 weeks, people have been getting used to the fact that they can post and kind of answer each other's questions. I also put news articles on there. Anything that's kind of sort of slightly, you know, obvious to Cambridge that might be of interest. So we've had, did you know you can get a public toilet loo key? I didn't even know that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's called a radar key you can get from the council.
That's very exciting.
You can open any public toilet in the whole of the
really?
Cambridge. Yeah, I did not know that. Things of interest, you know, from, you know, punting to bat safaris. There's all sorts of things on there. But we also have a website as well. And on that website, we're building a directory of local businesses and using our platform, if you like, as a way for those businesses to reach the community in a unique way. And obviously, we can deal with people in real time, which is something that most advertisers or whatever can't do. If somebody says, I need a pub or I need something, you know, we can literally respond to that straight away. And that's really unique about us.
So is that the business side of things that
yes.
you were talking about? Do you charge people to go
yes,
on the
we
website?
Do. Yes, we do. Very reasonable. And we have various different packages, starting from around, if you're sort of a person on your own, just a one-man band, if you like, it starts from about £35 a month.
Oh, well, that's very reasonable.
Yeah, and it can go right up to kind of large business, and we do kind of, you know, partnerships, all that kind of stuff. So sort of using the Enfield model, if you like, the business model and how they've worked already, and it's amazing actually. We've already got some transfer of business from there to here already, because obviously you have things like chains that have worked very clearly and closely in the community, but obviously work across the country. So they've already said to us, we've been so successful in Love Your Doorstep in Enfield, we'd really like to use you in Cambridge as well. So that's been brilliant.
Well, yeah, let's talk about Love Your Doorstep briefly in Enfield, because that was the first one, is that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, my friend Emma, she lived in Enfield, and it was after the riots. Obviously, you can imagine in Enfield, the whole atmosphere was really quite a scary place to be, and people felt very disjointed, and it was a hard place for her to imagine bringing her children up. And a lot of the businesses had kind of taken a hit because of kind of damage and all that kind of palaver. So in the end, she just decided she was going to set up a Facebook group just to kind of bring people together. And as that just hit, completely skyrocketed, she realised there was a business potential involved in that as well. And so, you know, that's where it started. And from Enfield, she, you know, 4 years ago, she now has to over 12,000 members. And over 700 businesses.
Wow. And I suppose part of the thing with Enfield was to heal as well, to heal the
Absolutely.
Divides, and it must have done that too.
Yeah, completely, because it's not all about kind of sell. I mean, a lot of what they do is very much kind of just because it's partnership, it's community, it's looking after each other. And I know that a lot of Emma's work isn't always about kind of bringing in the money. I mean, so often, and she's that sort of person, so often she's doing things that will just help people, putting people in touch with people that need stuff, or it might be the fact that there's a business that perhaps needs some help and she can put in a mentor scheme for them. She's done treasure hunts with local businesses and the local schools, which has, you know, really brought the high street kind of out and with each other, and opened up a whole kind of new side of things to children who have really kind of only ever seen it as a news agent to go and buy a bar of chocolate, you know, rather than looking at revenue and kind of PAYE and all the things that you could do, that you can teach children about kind of, you know, finance and business and, you know.
So is that what you're aiming to do with Cambridge, something along those lines, bringing not just an information service, but bringing people together.
Absolutely. It's about making relationships work and bringing people together. And obviously we can do that from a business point of view, but we can also do that in terms of helping people out. I had a brilliant post the other day. I mean, we had such a response. I just said, it would really help me so that I can match people up if you could tell me what you do. And I just had so many responses. I mean, we're well into kind of, I think it's like nearly 120 responses. So I've got people said, I'm a lawyer, I'm an artist, I'm a gardener, I'm a weight loss specialist, I'm a language teacher, I provide audio and visual equipment for people, nanny. There's a lot of mums on there who are really appreciative of the kind of the support that Love Your Doorstep's giving, driving instructor, you know, all sorts, which has just been fantastic. And within that chat, people have said, oh, I need a driving instructor, please can I call, please can you PM me, you know, and it's already started, and that brings me a lot of happiness.
Because we talking earlier, you know, this is an organisation to bring the community together. We're a community radio station. This word community, it is bandied about a lot.
Yeah.
You still believe it exists, obviously.
Definitely. When I came to Cambridge originally, I lived in Mill Road, and I was just, it was a wonderful feeling to be a part of something which was very multicultural, and just people really came together. There was anything from kind of assertiveness workshops to, you know, children's playgroups, and I'd never really, apart from being in London, where I really miss London very much. I lived in North London. This really reminded me of that sort of kind of everybody pulls together and everybody helps. I love the Mill Road Fair. I love, you know, the traditions that Cambridge has, and I love the music side of it as well, which often, you know, it has a whole community to itself as well. And then my husband, being a scientist, he's obviously involved in the science park side of things, and there's that whole academic kind of side of things as well, and they have their own community. And it really struck me that there are lots and lots of communities in Cambridge, but I don't know how much they all tie together. And I think that's my goal here, is the fact that I didn't doubt for one moment that Cambridge hasn't got a huge community. It's just that I think sometimes people feel a bit disenfranchised from the other, and they tend to belong to one. And I think that there's so much that we could do by looking after each other and sort of reaching out and branching out and kind of sharing our skills, I suppose.
And I suppose what you're doing, because people say, well, this thing community, it might not exist anymore because of the internet, social media. We're all sitting in our homes, we're all on the internet, but you're using that to actually connect people.
Well, completely. And it's funny you say that, because I'm a teacher and I have had a lot of difficulties over the last few years, you know, with social media, particularly in schools, and the negativity that it can create and the problems that it can cause, particularly for young people. And this is a wonderful way to actually use social media for a good thing. And you hear so much negativity about it, you know, people just constantly sort of use it as the, you know, the blight on society, whilst everybody loves it. It causes so much problem, so many problems. But I think this is kind of in your face, you know, it really turns that around, and it just says, no, let's use this and really kind of bring the best out in people and use it for the good of the community. Because community is such a kind of fluid word, really. It doesn't just mean people who live in one area. It means people who have the same interests. It means, you know, people who are looking for the same thing, you know. And so I've already been harassed, is probably too strong a word, but people have said, please can you start a Find Your Love on Your Doorstep.
Oh, good luck with that. That could lead you down a whole different route.
Well, absolutely. But I mean, people are saying we really need it. So, you know, there's so many different opportunities that could come from this already. My brain starts to popcorn with the opportunities.
So is Cambridge the second one of these Love Your Doorstep organisations?
Well, no. From Enfield, then Potter's Bar and Barnet were set up. And I'm the fourth, but I'm, if you like, those other ones are run from London, from the head office, whereas we're sort of our first one away from London, and so we're a franchise. And so I run this, and it's kind of my gig, if you like. Having said that, we've just launched another one in Australia in a little a resort called Perigean Springs.
That sounds pretty.
Which is where a friend of Emma's, who set the whole thing up originally, she lives there, and she just thought it would just be fantastic to do it there. So it's a bit random where we are at the moment, but we do have a lot of interest from various different places. And, you know, we're just very conscious of the fact we don't want to run before we can walk, and just make sure that what we do really well, and we do it properly, and we've grown it from the grassroots. And I think the difference between what we do and there are other community sites out there is the fact that we have somebody who lives in that area and who becomes that community manager and knows what they're talking about. It's not just a kind of a centrally run administrative thing.
Well, I can feel your enthusiasm for this. How much time does this take up, though? You've got a young baby. Your husband is here looking after your baby in our green room. So how much time is this taking for you?
It takes a lot of time, and you know, it's been hard to balance the whole kind of bringing up a baby and making sure that you give them enough time, making sure I do this. But I'm doing it perhaps slower than I would like, just because I need to make sure that I do it really, really well. And in that case, whilst I'm sort of, I love to try and do things kind of all at once, I've had to kind of have a bit of a word with myself about this, you know, and make sure that, you know, things are quality. But I'm already got some help coming this week, which is fantastic. And I've got work experience, and they're really keen to do that. And I've even had some interest in people becoming an apprentice. So, you know, things are out there. And I've had also a couple of sort of prolific posters already inquire as to whether or not there's any sort of jobs as well. So it may be that I build up a rota for people looking after the group, if you like, because obviously I have to do that from about 8 o'clock in the morning to about 10 o'clock at night at the moment, every day.
And is the idea that there will be more around the country, and that in a way you create a bigger, a kind of national community, if you like, of these organisations as well as the actual community within
the
town?
Absolutely. I mean, we could just literally set them all up and just hope that it all just works, but that's not what we do. You know, what we do is we have to make sure that we've got the right person in that area to set it up. And that's what we're doing at the moment, really looking at kind of people might say to us, oh, you need to set that up here. And that's all well and good. You're absolutely right. We agree with you. But it takes that sort of person who is, like you say, enthusiastic, really wants to kind of go for it, and has got lots to offer and knows people in the community and is willing to get to know people in the community. You know, I try and make sure I go to these events and try and meet people and go into their shops and their businesses, and it needs that sort of person to do that. So, you know, I think it's a very good chance we could spread and do something in Bury and perhaps Bedfordshire and maybe Essex, so, and obviously already in Hertfordshire. So at the moment I'm sort of looking at spreading outwards, but it depends on getting the right people.
It must be good for you, because you live here, but you must be discovering all kinds of things that you didn't know about.
Honestly, there are things that I just did not know about Cambridge. It's just amazing. And one of our little features is I Spy Where Am I, and I find little things that I didn't realise was there, or I thought, I wonder whether or not people will notice. And I've got somebody else now who kind of is joining in with that. And I just didn't know that these places existed, you know. And people also telling me about pubs. Yesterday we said, it's Sunday, I'd really like to just go out of Cambridge, but in Cambridgeshire somewhere for a Sunday roast. It would be fantastic. And I was just bombarded with things, places I had never heard. And it's all well and good you driving around Cambridgeshire hoping when you see a pub that it's okay. But when you get a personal recommendation, that's what makes it. And that's what this is all about, you know.
That's brilliant, Anna. Well, if people want to get involved, and presumably you're looking for people who just want to sign up and be part of your community,
absolutely,
as well as
yeah,
people with businesses who want to advertise, where should they go?
Okay, well, you can go, you can find us on Facebook on Love Your Doorstep Cambridge. You can also find me. I'm Anna Lyds, LYDS, Love Your Doorstep, and I'm on Cambridge, or you can email me on anna.osborne, that's no you, at loveyourdoorstep.co.uk.
Lovely. Oh, well, thank you very much for coming into the studio to chat to us.
From 10 till 1,
Mid-Mornings with Mike Pryor.
Right, it's just a little after 11:30, and I have been joined in the studio here this morning by a gentleman called David Crilly. David is the artistic director for the Cambridge Shakespeare Festival, and something that I think's been going for a few years, David, is that right?
This is our 28th year.
Yes, oh yes.
Yes, we started in 1988. And actually, I realised a few weeks ago. I was 56 in June.
Right.
And I started the festival when I was 28. So I've been doing it for half my life.
Oh, my goodness. Now, listen, I'm going to embarrass you a little bit here. The Independent newspaper rated the Cambridge Shakespeare Festival as fourth in the 50 arts festivals in the UK. And the Times newspaper were quoted as saying that there's no knee-bending to trendy revisionism, but rather a tour de force of Elizabethan drama. So clearly it's very highly rated, isn't it?
It is. The profile of the festival has grown enormously over the last, 10 years, but since we started, of course. You know, it was very small scale when we started, but now it has an international profile. We have people who come from California, there was a family who came along to our production of Romeo and Juliet at St. John's the other night, and I just happened to hear a conversation that was happening in. And this person had been to the festival every year since 1995, had come to everything, and he was there again this year, despite the fact that he now lives in Australia.
Oh, so that was really, and how did it all start then? Because that's a very long time ago, and you were a young boy at the time.
I was a slip of a lad. The origins are really not very good. Not very grand. I was, because I'm actually a musician, and right. I was doing research at actually Magdalen College in Oxford. And a friend of mine had his own theatre group, all students, and he asked me to be the musical director for it, which meant I had to write some pseudo Elizabethan guitar music for interludes and stuff like that. I didn't have any theatre background prior to that at all. But I went along to the rehearsals to see where I'd need to do things. And I just thought, this is really awful. And it really was. Cause I never thought about, 28 years down the line. I just thought I could probably do a better job myself.
Mm.
And I just, so I just set it up and thought I'd have a go. And it really took off from there.
So did you know Shakespeare at all, other than the fact that we all know Shakespeare, but did you have any intimate knowledge of his plays?
Well, I think that the reason that I get on so well with Shakespeare is that I never did it at school. I'm from Liverpool.
Snap.
And the school that I went to wasn't all that great. It was more to do with crowd control than education. And so we didn't do it. But one of the things that I've learned over the years is that the way Shakespeare is taught in schools is really detrimental to everyone's experience of it, because kids sit around in class reading little bits of scenes and stuff like that. It's not to be read, it's not to be studied, it's to be experienced and felt and engaged with in a dramatic way, rather than, it's not literature, it's drama.
And like you, I didn't read Shakespeare at school, but one of the things that occurs to me whenever you do look at any of the text from it is, how difficult is it for contemporaries to relate to it, nowadays, because when you look at the way it's been written, obviously it was written in Old English, and I suppose the analogy I would make is with, say, the Bible. Mm. Anybody reading the Bible would find it very difficult, because the vocabulary used in the Bible is not what we would speak these days, and I guess that's true of Shakespeare too.
It is, but the thing is, with the great thing about Shakespeare, the stories are often quite, not very good, in fact. Something like Othello is hinges on the fact that Desdemona drops a handkerchief, which Othello then says, why don't you pick up your handkerchief? And she says, no, I'll pick it up later. And someone steals it, and then it's a ridiculous kind of plot device. But the beauty of Shakespeare is the way the story is told, the language of it. And what I kind of compare it to, if you think of a Hollywood blockbuster, the special effects department. Well, Shakespeare didn't have that. He just had actors in costume on a barely lit stage, exactly the same way that we have. But his special effects are the language. The way in which he says things is so much more fantastic than anything that we could, the way he affects our imagination. And the thing is, although it's written in a style with which we're unfamiliar these days, the fact that so much of the meaning of what we say is contained in our vocal inflections and our body language and our gestures, and we kind of forget that. One of the things that I love about the festival is that we have kids coming to the shows all the time, that are children, sit there, and no one's told them that it's hard yet. No one's told them that it's special or that it's, you know, that it's elite or anything like that. They just come along and they accept it because it's just some people saying things and moving in a particular way, and they love it. And it's, that's great. I love that thing.
And I think that's a good word you used there, elite, because again, I would relate it to ballet, right? So my wife and I, just 2 or 3 years ago, we'd never been to a ballet performance ever, and kind of thought, you know, it's a bit elitist, isn't it? You know, ballet and so on. And we decided that once in our lives, we would perhaps just go and try it to see what it was like. So we went to Covent Garden and expected everybody to be in Dickie Bows and so forth, and was first off knocked out by the fact that people were wandering around in jeans, you know. And then we thought, well, we're either going to like it or we're not going to like it. Let's just go see. But actually, we ended up really enjoying it. Yeah. And you know, we're just regular people, and we thought that's probably not for us, but absolutely, how wrong could we be? And I wonder if Shakespeare's a bit like that.
Absolutely. What I find is the people, you know, I often get that, you know, people say, oh, you're doing Shakespeare, it's a bit boring, it's a bit funny, don't you? But actually, it's not. I mean, it's there are the high-flown poetic moments in Shakespeare's plays, but there are as many knob gags in Shakespeare's plays as can I say that on the...
Well, you just did.
Well, I mean, a lot of it is carry-on as well. You know, there's lots and lots of smutty, bawdy humour in Shakespeare's plays, and, you know, we play that as well, and it is for everybody. And the reason that it lasts is because all the characters in Shakespeare's plays are so finely drawn. We know them, we recognise them, absolutely. You know, in all the plays, no matter, we can tune in to these people because we all know them.
And as you said before, even though they're written hundreds of years ago, they're quite contemporary stories, aren't they, in terms of what they are?
Absolutely.
So again, I was talking to my wife because she did study Shakespeare at school and so forth, and I said to her, I said, well, I'll ask David, you know, if you're somebody that's never ever studied it, never ever seen it being performed and so on, which of the plays do you think would be a good play for somebody to go see?
Well, I actually think all of them, because the thing, there is no barrier there. I mean, some of them are more wordy than others. Something like The Tempest, for example, is slightly more wordy. But I suppose it depends what mood you're in.
She said to me, A Midsummer's Night's Dream would be a good one. I don't know if that's true.
Oh, yes. Well, it's a big favourite. We do it every year because the demand for it is so great. And it's a lovely thing on a balmy summer's evening to sit there with a picnic, and children come along dressed as fairies. And it's a big kind of family occasion. Saying that, though, it depends what your particular taste is. We have a real the programme for the festival this year is so extreme. At the moment, we've got The Merry Wives of Windsor at King's College, which is a real kind of oops, there go my bloomers farce kind of thing. You know, people coming in the wrong doors and falling into baskets and hiding in and dressing up as women to escape and all this kind of. And then on the other hand, we've got Titus Andronicus at Robinson College, which is the most psychologically bleak and damaged piece imaginable. It's a bloodbath. There's all kinds of... And actually, I would warn your listeners not to bring any children along to that, because under 12s wouldn't have it. It's the end of the first week of the festival. I've already spent £500 on stage blood.
Oh,
for that. There's all kinds of things going on. So there's a huge range of, and it depends what your particular taste is. But for people coming along for the first time, actually any of it is accessible for the reasons that I said before. It's not something which is separate from contemporary life, because even though the language is different, the movement, the gesture, the way people are, and the interaction between the characters is something that everybody recognises.
Now, you mentioned two or three things. I'm just going to pick you up on there. First thing that you've mentioned, and I know a lot of people listening probably are aware of this, but maybe there's a few who aren't, the locations for the plays is a little bit unique, isn't it, really?
It's fantastic. Yeah, we're really, really lucky. We're the places that we're in, you know, we're in Robinson College has its own kind of fixed auditorium. That's lovely.
And are these indoor locations?
No,
outdoor.
It's all outdoor. Right.
So it's in the gardens, basically.
Yeah. We're in Downing College, St. John's, King's, Trinity. And we're It's even more special than that, because a couple of the venues, like at King's and at Trinity, were in the Fellows' Gardens. So even ordinary members of the colleges aren't allowed in there normally. So it's very special, and they're spectacularly beautiful.
Now, the other thing you mentioned was about children, notwithstanding the play that you mentioned there, children generally are welcomed.
Absolutely, yes. That's one of the things that I'm really kind of enthusiastic about with the festival. So many times people have come along afterwards or written to us and said, we didn't know what to expect. We brought our children along, and I'm talking about 4 and 5 year olds, not 10 year olds. We didn't know what to expect. We thought they'd get bored with but they. We've opened their eyes to it, and that's something that I'm really kind of smug about, to be honest.
So they're not particularly disruptive, whilst does it capture their attention?
Oh yeah, we had a fantastic moment a few years ago. We were doing a Midsummer Night's Dream at St John's College, and there's the famous kind of play within the play at the end, where Bottom is kind of doing his Pyramus, and he's killing himself, stabbing himself, and he says die, 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 and he goes on, and there was a little 5-year-old kid in the sitting on the grass, and he just said, "Will you die?" And it was just magic, and the audience fell about. And that's the thing. There's a real kind of intimacy with the performers and the audience,
and kind of breaks down the barriers, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the way it's set out, we have a couple hundred chairs at each venue, just ordinary kind of it's not raked seating or anything like that. It's all on ground level, and then we have an area in front of the chairs on the lawn where people put picnics down. But the aisles that run through the audience are used by the actors. So it's not the audience sitting there watching what's happening.
So very much interacting with the audience.
The actors are going through in and out of the audience throughout the show, and it's a very close experience for everybody.
Goodness me. So the other thing that I noticed, I don't know if they're still running, because I know the thing has now started, but how many plays are there that you're performing?
All summer, we're doing 8 full productions.
8 plays, but they don't all start and all finish at the same times, do they?
No, we've got 4 running at the moment. We have Titus Andronicus at Robinson College, Romeo and Juliet at St John's, The Merry Wives of Windsor at King's, and Love's Over's Lost at Downing. And then at the end of the month, we have a very busy changeover weekend, and on the 3rd of August, the second half of the festival starts, and that's Much Ado About Nothing, Timon of Athens, Macbeth, and A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Now, I noticed that on the website, it talks about workshops and so on. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that too?
Well, one of the things that we do, we're very keen to engage with the community and to put something back, and we have a fantastically loyal following. So what we do is we offer workshops and talks and things like that to schools and colleges and language schools and things like that. I'm doing one tomorrow at the Kaplan School on Barton Road. We're doing a Romeo and Juliet workshop, and I'll go along there and talk about the play and the production with all the students there, and I'll take a few actors with me, and we'll do a couple of scenes, and we'll talk about stage combat,
and
we'll
get the kids involved.
Yes, we get them up to do a few things as well, and we show them a few basic stage combat moves because we have real swords and everything, and it's all very engaging for the students. And then they're ready for we introduce them not just to the play, but our version of the play, our production, and then they come along in the evening and they feel not only ready for the experience, but actually they also feel that they know the actors a little bit as well, and that's nice for them to.
And is there still availability for people to sort of call you up and write? So how would they do that, by the way?
They just call through the website.
Right.
The email address on the website is mail@cambridgeshakespeare.com. Those emails come directly to me, so I deal with all that.
Now, on the day, because obviously there's various performances, they're all in the evening at 7:30,
yes,
is that
all
right?
Yes, 7:30. Yep. Apart from, we have a charity matinee programme, which is Saturdays at 2:30, and we have one play each week there, and that's been fantastic. That program is memory of my sister who died a while ago, and so far we've raised over £64,000 for the Children's Hospice.
Because we haven't mentioned that so far, but is it all of the money, or is it how does it work?
Every penny.
Every penny that's generated from the income from the performances is given over to charity.
Yes, right? For the charity program.
Yes,
what we do is. And the way that we ensure that is the case is we don't sell any tickets through the website or through the city centre box office or anything like that, because if you do that, of course,
incurs cost.
There are the credit card deductions and 10% or whatever it is for the. So we just do cash on the door. So the cash on the door and all the programme sales and any interval drinks and everything, that's just put to one side and that goes to the charity.
So there's no pre-ordering. It's literally a case, a bit like Wimbledon. If you turn up and you're first in the queue, you'll get in. And if you're at the end of the queue, maybe you won't.
Well, the charity shows everybody gets in.
Oh, really? Right.
We're not going to turn anyone away for the charity.
Well, but that's a bit intimate then.
Yeah, well, the thing is we want to raise as much money as we can for the hospital.
Other than that, if people just want to come to the regular performances, how would they get tickets?
Well, people can get tickets in advance through our website.
Mm-hmm.
The City Centre box office, who have changed their name to Cambridge Live or something.
Yes,
like
Cambridge
that.
Live.
Cambridge
right.
Live, yeah. They had a go at me for not giving their right name out before. So that people can get tickets through them, or people can just turn up, because we always keep a book of tickets for sale on the door, because we know people, because it's outside, of course.
Sure.
People want to make sure that the weather's nice and things like that. So people might not decide until 6:30 that they'd like to come along. And so we cater for that and we make sure that there's a
book. Is it a sort of a percentage? You know, do you keep 10% back, or how does that work?
Well, we keep 100 tickets back for sale on the door.
Okay.
It's never happened that anyone has turned up and we've got through those 100 tickets.
Really?
So people can always be sure.
Which is great, because as you say, if you're a bit dubious as to how the weather's going to turn out, then you can do that. Great stuff. Well, I wish you well in terms of the performances. Have they been well attended so far?
Oh, it's been great. Yeah, we've had really fantastic feedback, and the weather's been kind to us. Even last Thursday when we had that massive storm, we'd just finished Romeo and Juliet. The audience left, and the skies opened.
Bit of a light show for you.
Yes, it's great.
Oh, that's great. And just to remind everybody that children are welcome. You can take along your picnic baskets and your rugs and so forth if you wish to.
Bottle of wine as well.
Chairs? Can you take chairs? Chairs provided, I guess?
Well, we have 200 chairs, but they're unreserved, so it's first come, first served.
So those folding chairs, people can take those?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine as well. So it's a real kind of party atmosphere, and unless it goes to Titus Andronicus, in which case it isn't.
and relatively inexpensive as well.
It is, yeah. I started the festival. It used to be the Oxford and Cambridge Shakespeare Festival, and because my background was in Oxford, and another couple of companies have started up doing a similar thing. And one of them charges almost twice what we do for exactly the same setup. And I'm really keen to make it affordable for people. Obviously, we've got loads of bills to pay and everything, and you know, but we try and work it so that we can manage and that we put it on a level that makes it available to everybody.
Right. Right. Great stuff. £16 for a normal ticket, and there are concession prices as well.
Yes, £12. Concessions apply to senior citizens, that's 60 and over, full-time students, disabled, unwaged.
Well, David, thanks ever so much for coming in. You know, I'll have to try and persuade my wife to come along and maybe we'll see one of the performances, because it'd be lovely to see the inside of some of those college gardens as well.
That's part of the experience, I think.
Mm. Great stuff. Thanks very much, David.
Pleasure.
Okay, that's David Crilly. He's the artistic director for the Cambridge Shakespeare Festival. That's performances running right through to the end of August. I think 29th of August,
29th
is it?
29th is the final night, yeah.
Okay.
163 performances in 7 weeks.
indelibly printed on your brain, I'm sure. Okay, thank you.
From 10 till 1.
Mid-mornings with Phil Rowe.
So a meeting's to be held at Ross Street Community Centre here in Cambridge to discuss the meanings of community from within a community. It's going to be held on August the 14th. And shall we say the main instigator, probably the only instigator at the moment, is Daisy Zoll of that one. She'll correct me if I've got it wrong and if she's got a few allies by her side. And I'm sure she has. But we welcome her to the show. It's not your first time with us, Daisy, but it's lovely to welcome you back.
It's lovely to be here.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, very nice.
So you had this idea and you have you emailed the station about it, and it's nice to hear from people from the community who can come in and talk to us. You've got an intriguing poster, actually, and various logos in there, including Cambridge City Council, which one might expect. Romsey Art Festival for 2015. We should be talking more about that towards the end of the interview as well. Also, Cambridge Eastside Creates for 2015. Now, that is an organisation I'm not aware of, Daisy. Should we start there and you can tell us what
Let's
that's
start.
All about?
Well, the Romsey Art Festival, Cambridge Eastside Creates is kind of the big sister to Romsey Art Festival. So everything that's been offered for the Romsey Art Festival is being offered to a wider part of Cambridge, to the eastern part of Cambridge. Cambridge Eastside Creates. It's looking at four wards in the east of Cambridge. Petersfield, Romsey, Abbey and Coleridge, I think.
Yeah, I was wondering whether Barnwell might be included in that, but it depends where you...
I think Barnwell is kind of included, yeah.
But it doesn't exclude anyone else from all over the city and the surrounding area, of course,
to come along
and be involved, of course.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But it's kind of mainly looking at widening out Romsey Art Festival.
You made your poster a real talking point, actually, a real topic here, because you put supremely successful species... which is a bit of a tongue tire if you went really fast with those. Talking, of course, about us as human beings. But at the same time, probably our nature isn't always placed centrally as it should be.
Well, I've been kind of looking at aspects of community. I've been looking into the human microbiome, which is all kind of bacteria that live in and on us. And they're just as important for our functioning as we ourselves are. I mean, this number gets reeled out all the time, but there are 10 times as many bacterial cells to human cells. And so really we're made up of a community of multicelled organisms. And you can scale up how bacteria and microbes behave in us to larger groups of multicelled organisms, like our community groups and what have you. They kind of have similar behaviour. And so, like a fractal, the pattern can just kind of keep on extending. And so I've called this meeting to help me create some work about community, because I've got ideas about what I think community is, but they don't really mean anything without actually talking to the community, I think.
Do you feel, Daisy, then, that there's really just not enough community spirit around Cambridge? Some people might disagree with you. I don't know.
No, I don't think. I think certainly here in this area, there was a night market at the weekend at the top of Glider Street.
Yeah, it was fabulous. We popped in there and the food was brilliant. I was going out for dinner, unfortunately. I couldn't enjoy some of the there was Jamaican food there, and the smells and the sounds, and it was absolutely rammed with people. Absolutely packed.
I think there are lots of community events, and certainly in the summer, lots of community events can happen more often. And so there are lots of street parties all round here. I mean, I'm sure there are in other parts of Cambridge as well. And it's exciting. I don't think community is lacking necessarily in this area.
So how do you think that you could, shall we say, fortify the community spirit by having this meeting and starting out on a little, what's little for now might become a great new project?
Well, I think just talking to the community, because there's lots of things laid on for the community, but the community is made up of us. And so I'd like to speak to more of whoever us is. Really?
Yes, it does. I mean, feedback really is what you're trying to get from the, say, grassroots, spectrum across the community, I suppose.
Yeah.
From those who maybe don't have much money at the moment, for those maybe even homeless, to other people who are sort of a string of properties along a street, at the other end of the spectrum. They're all important. They all have their ideas. They're all perhaps equally as community-minded and spirited.
Yes.
Whether they're poor or rich.
And we all work better when we communicate with each other. And it sometimes seems that communication can fall down in certain places. And so, yes, I'd like to talk to everyone.
They will have ideas. They'll come to you. Hopefully they'll come to you for this meeting, 7 o'clock on August the 14th.
Yeah.
Coming up just around the corner, Ross Street Community Centre. You must have your ideas, though, Daisy. Or do you want to put those ideas among the community now, or rather than wait for them to come to you on the 14th?
If we were to look at what supremely successful species are, then I think that can kind of start some questions. Like wheat, whatever the grain that makes bread, is an incredibly supremely successful species. one way or another, a lot of us who eat bread will tend it and grow it and make sure that it lives very well so that we can eat it, and so the species goes on. Pandas aren't very successful species. They can only eat one thing.
The bamboo.
And they're not really interested in anything else. They're not really interested in each other, it seems, sometimes. I don't know. Certainly that's going on in Edinburgh.
Yeah, the gestation period for a panda is very long, and they're only actually, shall we say, sort of sexually want to come together every, was it 2 days in every year, is it,
know.
Or something like
not
that?
Often.
It's not often when all the hormones trigger in and they can sort of, shall I say, become amorous. And, of course, in those 2 days, often they don't.
Yeah, so they don't communicate with each other. They're not supremely successful species. And I was just wondering whether we are successful species, because we're not necessarily treating the environment that's supporting us incredibly well. We're not necessarily doing awfully, but perhaps we could be more aware of what's going on around and function better for it.
With over 3 billion of us on the planet, you could say that this species is doing very well.
Well, yeah.
By its sheer propagation in numbers, whether population is another issue for you in terms of volumes of numbers of people on this planet.
Well, are we going to reach a point where actually we're too crowded in, and so things like diseases can run rampant, and with plane travel and diseases can be communicated amongst us very quickly? Are we going to be reaching a point where perhaps we're too populous?
And this brings another point. Many people say, well, we're a city of 135,000 people as a population, growing rapidly towards 140,000 now. Do you feel that we're overcrowded? Do you think our infrastructure here in Cambridge is supporting our needs in terms of, I don't know, our roads? Do you think many more people need to get out of their motor cars, for instance, and get on their bicycles?
Perhaps. I was talking to a community. She looks after a number of the community centres in some of the new areas that are being built, and trying to make sure that we communicate amongst each other and amongst the people who are moving in, trying to keep community cohesion in place so that we can function better. And she was talking about how, yeah, perhaps roads could be better thought about. And certainly it seems like that when I drive around town. And I'm sorry, I do drive around town.
I drive around town too.
Yeah.
Well, but I try and use a bicycle. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing is a good. People might agree with this policy, I suppose, is the City Council's policy on pricing of car parks, you know, and the sheer lack of spaces available sometimes. That it does a good thing, which does put me on either my 2 feet and I walk around the place, or I'm on my bicycle. Yeah, I have no excuse. I only live 3 miles away, so I should really be coming on my bicycle far more often than I do. It's only occasional, and it's wrong. In my book, anyway, it's wrong that I'm not using my bike more.
But you see, you're talking on local radio and communicating with your environment and the species in and the multicelled organisms within your environment. So yes, that is a sign perhaps of human success, that you can talk to other people about the fact they ought to get on their bike every now and then.
As the only species that can communicate with language, although, of course, they say chimpanzees have a sort of very primitive language and are able to do that as well. But
yeah.
Community centres, then. You're using one, the Ross Street one, to have as a venue. Do you feel there are enough of those here in the city as well?
I don't get all the way around the city, so I couldn't really comment. But the more that there are, the better it is. But obviously you don't want to make too many so that kind of it gets watered down. I mean, I don't know. You want to have some concentrations, because otherwise people are going to be doing their community things all kind of in their own tiny little areas, and so you want to have some coming together. It's tricky. I don't know.
Is this a complete seed of a project for you, Daisy? Have you already got others around you that are sort of started to build or form the same opinions that we need to get more communication and collaboration and cooperation within the community?
I think there is stuff going on. I mean, this lady who told me about the new developments being built around the city, I think there is lots of community stuff going on.
I can only hope that you get lots of people who will come along and share some ideas with you.
Well, thank you for playing your part.
Yeah, well, we would like to, as a community station, so the C Word and Cambridge as well,
okay,
to get people down there. Once again, it's Thursday the 14th of August that Daisy will hope that you can turn up at the Romsey Community Centre, Ross Street Community Centre, I should be saying. And before you go, actually, that's a good job I said Romsey Art Festival as well, because I think you have some tie-ins with that. Before we go there, though, just to make absolutely certain people know where they're going, the Ross Street Community Centre, you've got a meeting room there, which you'll be using, as I say, on the 14th of Thursday at 7 p.m. And how so the tie-in with the Romsey Art Festival for September then, Daisy?
I will be making work in response to what gets said on the 14th. Because I have my ideas about community, but I feel like I ought to talk to the community and listen and find out what other people's ideas of community are. We're all multi-celled organisms in this bigger community.
Indeed. So you'll be doing a lot of listening, and hopefully others will do a lot of listening and a lot of talking when they come along to support you, I hope, anyway, on August the 14th. Do go along and support Daisy with her new initiative as a part of community. Daisy's old there. Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us this morning.
Thank you.
And good luck with it, of course.
Thank you very much.
From 10 till 1.
Mid-mornings with Mike Pryor.
We have a guest with us this morning. Ted Coney taught art and design at Hills Road Sixth Form College for 34 years. He semi-retired 10 years ago and moved from Great Shelford to Ely. Although he still teaches part-time at St Andrew's College in Cambridge, he has more time these days to devote to his lifelong passion of telling the story of his family through a series of paintings that he's created over the years. The unique thing about Ted's paintings and his family history is that he shares them with the world by giving guided tours to visitors at his 300-year-old home in Ely. Ted, welcome to Cambridge 105. Could you explain the background of how you came to have an art exhibition in your own home?
Well, I guess about 23 years ago, I did open studio for the first time when we lived in Great Shelford. And I found that with my paintings, people wanted to ask me questions about them, which I was very happy to talk about. And I so enjoyed that I always resolved that when I retired, I would do it on a more permanent basis. So when I, left Hills Road, although I didn't retire, actually, I thought this was the moment to do it. The children had left home. It was a bit easier to make it happen. But I realised Great Shelford wasn't the right place. Lovely as the village was, we needed somewhere that was on the footfall of tourists. So we set about looking for somewhere we actually wanted to live anyway. And I think as you get older, you actually need to be, a village was great when the children were young, but we like the buzz of a town now, somewhere where we can walk to things. I can go out every night in Ely. It's that kind of place. So we found this cottage by the river, and it took me 2 years to get it organised, but we set about setting it up as, I call it, Ely's first pop-up gallery, because it's only open on Sundays. And when I take all the signs down, obviously it's a private house, but when I put all the signs out, the A-board, the hanging signs, then we're open for business. What I'm doing is maybe, it'll be 3 years from me thinking of the idea, first of all, to doing the painting. So it takes on different forms. I'm looking at often a history from a distance. So I guess I can put things in which you don't if it's all happening immediately. I guess for me, the beginning of what I do now, because all my paintings, I call them family portraits. They're not conventional portraits. But the first one was in 1969 when my grandmother and her four sisters had all died. I mean, they were in their 80s and 90s. But then I just really wanted to do something. I wanted to hang on to them. In a way that was meaningful for me. So I did a painting called Life Cycle, which actually, when people come to the house to do one of my tours, whatever tour I'm doing, I always show that first, because it was the beginning.
So what creates a spark in your mind to think, okay, I'm going to do a painting on this topic? You know, what is it that occurs to you?
I'd got a little note in my pocket, and I thought, today I mustn't talk about death, because I'll put people off coming. But often, you know, sad things often do trigger things off, simply because they're very strong emotions. Sometimes it's really happy things. I've been always drawing at the birth of at least two of my three children, which became paintings later. But it's the sad things sometimes that kind of move you, and you think, I've got to find a form to make that work. And in the end, it becomes something which is, you know, I'm not saying you feel happy about it, but you feel more satisfied that you've completed what seemed at the time to be something not, you know, a rather kind of sad thing that's happened to your family.
If people come and visit the pop-up gallery, what can they expect to see?
Right, well, they can expect to pay £3 to start with, because I'm taking them on a guided tour. Usually the first thing I show them is the garage, because in there is my 1931 Morris Minor, which we've had for over 40 years. And it does appear in some of the paintings. And I kind of make the point that you're going to see, as well as the paintings, you're going to see the objects that I use in the paintings. And this is one of the objects. So we start with that. And then we'll go into the hallway, where I have a permanent film setup, a film loop. And really what it is, it's a lot of old little bits of Super 8 film, video, early digital, and all interlocked together, which kind of, I always say to people, this is not going to explain my work, but it's giving you a flavour. So they watched that for 2 or 3 minutes, watched over by 6 generations of the Coney family, because I've got floor-to-ceiling photographs. And then, being a bit theatrical, we then go through to the kitchen, which is in darkness, except for this one painting that's set upon an easel that I did in 1969. And then after that, obviously, I take people around the house, and I've selected about 6 or 7 paintings on a theme. I've got 8 different tours. And then they come downstairs again, and I show them maybe one painting on the electronic sketchbook, so they can see the background material, just to one of the paintings they've seen. And then just finally, if they're not too exhausted, we go into my studio to see the one I'm working on at the moment.
And are the tours by appointment only, or do you roll up and just
no,
go around?
No, what I've found over the years is it's better, because I can only take 6 at a time, otherwise you lose the experience. So I always say to people on all my publicity material, booking essential. That way you know I'm going to be there, and you know you're going to be part of the 6 on that particular day. But I'm a bit flexible, because sometimes people will ring me up from another city and they'll say, well, we're coming on a coach tour to Ely Cathedral, but could we do you afterwards? And that's a bit daunting, actually. But I always say, well, that's the biggest attraction in Ely, and I'm definitely the smallest.
And you've got a website. So yes. If people go visit the website, what could they expect to find there?
Well, on the website, you've got all the details about coming on a tour. If you go to the virtual tour page, you can click on that, see a 30-second free bit, and then if you want to, you can then pay 99p and see a tour of 9 minutes, which will cost you, as I say, 99p. And hopefully, if you live near Ely, that hopefully will encourage you to come and book for a real visit as well.
If people see any of your paintings and think, I'd like to own one of those, is that possible?
No, I don't sell the actual paintings.
Right.
But on my website is
a prints
for sale page.
Yes.
So if you click through to the prints for sale page, many of the paintings it links to a sort of printing gallery. I don't do them myself, but I have a guy, but he always brings them to me to sign before they go out to the customer.
Well, Ted, thanks ever so much for coming in. What's the web address for your website?
It's www.tedkearney'sfamilyportraits.co.uk.
And all the information, if people want to visit, they can find contact details.
Yes, you can contact me either on the website or by phone. All the details are there.
Good. Maybe next time I'm up at Ely, I'll give you a call.
Yes, or you can do the virtual tour, of course.
Indeed, yeah. Thank you.
Afternoons with Kelvin Tabor. Cambridge
105. So, good afternoon, Ali. Well, would you a regular guest now on the show itself? How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Kelvin. Hello.
That's good.
Good
and
to be here.
You brought James Murphy.
Yes, I have. I'd like to say friend, if that's all right, James.
I think so.
He's a comedian friend of mine, James Murphy.
Okay.
So, I wanted to introduce him to you, Kelvin.
Yeah, I've never met you before. So, a comedian yourself?
Yeah, I do some gigs locally, and I do gigs across the area.
So you're local in Cambridge itself?
Local in Cambridge, yeah, but travel all over, as Ali knows. Yeah.
I usually get James to drive me to gigs because my car's rubbish. Really rubbish.
Okay, so where have you played in Cambridge?
Well, the Corner House.
Yeah, my club,
for one of Ali's gigs, and there used to be one at the Boathouse as well, and a few others, but they spring up and disappear, but Ali's one stays around.
And sometimes you run your own gigs,
and
don't you?
I run my own
gigs
as well.
Right, okay, that's interesting. So how long have you been a comedian?
About 3 or 4 years.
Did you find it really difficult to get going? Can you remember your first gig?
Yeah, I drank about 8 cans of Red Bull.
So you were buzzing?
Yeah, I was absolutely flying, and sat in my chair at home about 3 o'clock in the morning, shaking. But no, it's good. I really enjoyed it, but it was terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to the Comedies Club down on Newmarket Road, and when I'm there, it's amazing. Even though they're up for 5 minutes, they have the confidence to get up onto stage and tell jokes.
Yeah.
It's you get people,
and also spend a little bit of time taking the mick out of you as well, Kelvin.
Yes, you do. You do. I can take it. But yeah, it's an amazing thing. Now, what you're doing here, it's different, isn't it? It's a spin-off from what you do normally.
Yeah. So we wanted to, if that's all right, just sort of tell you and your listeners about the new night that we're running as well. The other night
you're still doing
still at the Corner House. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a spin-off show from the Commoners Comedy Club, and it's going to be an open mic comedy night, so anybody can come and have a go, and we're going to be having some established acts who we know and love, and they're going to be doing their new material, and we're going to have new acts as well trying new material.
So anybody, if they're listening to the show now and they fancy having a go at being a comedian,
yourself,
yeah,
Kelvin.
I know, right?
I think you'd be booed off the stage quickly.
By you, Kate.
Yeah, and the pig.
So, if you go in, you've always got the joker at work, haven't you, in the office or somebody like that. Oh, there's always a comedian who thinks they're funny. I think they should come down to your gig itself.
Definitely.
Test their metal, definitely.
Yeah, which is this Sunday, the 26th, and it starts. They have to be there for 6. Is that just to sign up for papers or introduce them?
Yeah, so this is going to be a monthly gig that we're going to run. We did one last month, and the idea is that people come and sign up on the day. So it just takes away the having to send an email and book yourself in. You just turn up on the day, sign up from 6, we'll start the show at 7. And every month we're going to have a guest MC, so that'll keep things different and fresh. And this month is James, that's why I brought James along. He's going to run the show this month from this Sunday, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
And how long are the acts on for?
About 5 minutes.
Five minutes
each.
And do they have to have original material?
It's the unwritten rule that it has to be original.
It's got to be original for anyone to come down.
Yeah, their own stuff, really. And it doesn't even have to be that funny, I suppose. They're just they're having a good time. But no, it's just nice to try out and get started and stuff.
I'm sure there's people out there.
It'll be a nice audience for them as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Students, if they think they've got a mate, hey, mate, come on down, it's a bit funny. It could be the big break.
Yeah, exactly.
Could actually be the start of a massive career actually in the world of comedians, really.
We're hoping so, aren't we? We're waiting for that to happen, but
James has performed at the Commoners Comedy Club, and it's a good stage. It's a good room.
It's a very good venue.
It's a great place to get started,
and a lot of people turn up. I was surprised the last time that I went there. I was surprised that all the people was wow, this is it's a good gig.
Yeah,
and of course the ones you normally get on the other night are more professional, actually, on the circuit itself.
Yeah. Well, this night I called it Unpolished. I don't know if you'd seen on the Facebook page. So this is called the Commoners Unpolished Night, because the other night that we run, the Commoners Comedy Club, is more tried and tested material, whereas this is going to be a bit raw, a bit fresh and exclusive. So it's going to be slightly different to the other night.
When's the next, the original one?
Yeah, that's going to be in September the 10th.
Oh, right, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're actually having a break, aren't you, in August
from it? Yeah, because everybody goes to Edinburgh, don't they, James?
Yeah, they do, yeah. No acts are about.
Oh, Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah.
Have you been yourself, James?
Not yet. It's really expensive, actually, isn't it? It's about $5,000 to go because it's just the venues and the accommodation, and it's really hard. So it's something to do as an ambition, but it's sort of maybe a year or two down the line.
But you get a lot of big names go there, don't you?
Yeah, it's packed. Yeah, loads and loads. I think they have like thousands, 2,500 comedians or something go to Edinburgh.
I think it's worth going as a punter, just get the atmosphere and then see what it's like.
I'd have to. I'm going to have to go 1 year.
Yeah,
start saving.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Take us in your suitcase, Kelly.
I'll put you in there. I need a big suitcase.
What do you think we can expect from these unpolished nights?
Oh yeah, good point. Well. What do
it's
you
experimental,
reckon this
isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got an idea. So I don't know if you know of Periscope, the app that links to Twitter where you live broadcast.
Oh, it's so good.
It's over.
It's so good.
It's amazing, isn't it? And it's quite new. It's been about since March. But you live broadcast and then people comment on the broadcast. So what I thought about doing is using it at the gig and having two audiences, so a Periscope audience and a live audience, and they could interact and banter with each other and have a conversation. I don't actually have to do any work then. I can just stand by. My point is, so on. And they go, oh, look, he's got a fat head, and they can come back and say something equally disparaging. Yeah. But it sounds like, you know, it's not been done before, and I think it could be really exciting.
Yeah, so
I think it's definitely the future.
Yeah, that's a very good idea, because then you're getting comments from other people actually saying, well, yeah, this guy's really good, or the lady's really good.
Yeah.
Do you find you're getting more female comedians coming through the door itself?
What do you mean, just in general?
Well, just like comedians herself, female comedians up and coming, because it's a big thing to actually stand up, because everybody doesn't want to be moaned at, do they? Go, get off, you rubbish, boo! No. You know, a bit of heckling going on at the back. It kind of puts you off, and nobody wants to do that, and that's the unique thing with being a comedian. You overcome that, and if somebody heckles you, you say, what's your problem, mate? You know, try and make them shut up themselves. Yeah. Do you find you get many heckling going on down there?
Well, do you know what, actually, the last, because we've done this Unpolished Night once, and there was a heckler who's a drunk guy. And he's been a bit of an idiot, to be honest, and I think he was just trying to join in. I don't think he meant any harm, but the act that he was heckling, he sort of put him off because he was quite a new act. But then the MC who was there that night was a different chap to James, and he put him in his place in a nice
way. It's so funny though when they do that.
Yeah,
and because they just sit in the corner there, and they're not the big guys they thought they were.
No,
you know?
Exactly.
I think the rule is, if you want to heckle, you can heckle me, because that's okay. And I'm used to it. I get heckled in lots, so I can deal with it.
You'll give him some punishment back.
Yeah. But they're usually big guys, and it scares me a bit.
Right, okay.
They don't beat me up yet.
So do you know any jokes yourself? Can you tell a clean one on air?
Can I tell a clean one on air? Oh.
I don't think James is renowned for clean jokes.
I'm really not.
If it's not clean, we can't do it. It can't be broadcast.
What is your overall style that you like to...
Just nasty.
Are you a fast-paced comedian, one-liner, or are you more of a slow comedian?
I'm quite lethargic,
right?
Generally, so I take that onto the stage. So I suppose I'm quite.
Because some comedians, they use the air, don't they? Dead air, kind of, and they're telling you a joke, and then they kind of stop and wait for an action, and then they carry on, and they build it up, and then he's got the people who just bang, 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 like Stuart Francis. He's a very one-liner chap. I actually interviewed him on the show, and he told me a couple of gags, but they're one-liners, but very funny guy.
They're very cool. He's
very funny chap, and that's amazing, because then you've got people like Lee Evans, who just really bang, 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 but very sweaty, but a hilarious guy, and then you've got Michael McIntyre, who's a lot less, tame.
Yeah. I'd say with you, James, because the listeners can probably tell you've got quite a posh accent.
Thank you very much.
And I think he comes across very conversational and very polite.
My mum
would
be proud of that.
Yeah, and then he just drops in these rather rude punchlines.
Yeah. My partner comes in for a lot of abuse, and a lot of the stories that happen in our life get told, which probably shouldn't. So, gives you an idea.
Okay.
Still got his wedding ring on, though.
Well, hopefully somebody's listening today to the show, and they're an aspiring comedian, and they want to pop down and come to the open mic night.
Yeah.
It's this Sunday, the 26th.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Be there for 6.
Yeah.
Come and ask for Ali.
I'll be there. Yeah. Yep. James will be there as well. James Murphy.
Yeah. Yep. And just do your stuff live on air.
Yeah. If you're a bit nervous, just get in touch beforehand. We're on Facebook. Just Facebook Commoners Comedy. Send us a message, and any questions you have, we can answer before the night.
And is there a phone number they can get hold of you on, either?
No, not really.
Right, yeah, no, you don't phone calls then.
Just email
you, or even better, just turn up at the venue itself.
Chat face to face.
Yeah, which is at Newmarket Road, at the Corner Pub.
Corner House.
Yeah. Corner House Pub.
I actually went past there yesterday and was hoping for a new comedy night scene. So I might pop along, see what's happening.
Yes,
but I don't know if anyone else is coming, so
Kate, well, do you think you could do a...
No.
Go on, Kate. Do your turn.
I can't be, you know, funny on demand. It just kind of happens when it happens.
I think
you're not funny on demand. You just have right for hours and then over.
The thing is, I find the most is to remember what you've got to say.
Yeah, it's my biggest problem, actually.
My memory is shocking.
How long do you normally go on stage for yourself, James?
Doing about 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes.
And that's quite a long time.
It sort of doesn't sound very long, but it is actually quite a long time. And to memorize, and it's all your own material, so you should memorize it, but it's the order it all goes in because it's meant to all link together. And if a heckler jumps in and I deal with it, I then forget exactly where I am, but I can forget my keys and stuff, so I can't.
Do you find, as you said earlier, you take the mickey out of your partner, but do you get inspiration for anything else when you're writing for making?
Just generally life, I mean, I've got children as well. They're just, children are generally funny, aren't they?
They are. So you observe them and then you use it in your act.
Yeah, I tend to use it in my act, and my children say they're funny. My partner, she's funny, she doesn't know it, but she's funny. And and yeah, just stuff that you see, isn't it, really? And you think, oh, I might be able to twist that around.
Yeah, because you see the big names and they always take a situation of life and they build it up into this like hilarious sort of story, which works. It really does.
Yeah.
So anyway, Ali and James, thank you so much for popping in and telling us again. We'll see you again real soon. And it's this Sunday, the 26th, 7 p.m. Yep. Free entry as well.
Yep.
You don't have to pay to get in or anything
No.
And it could be a very good and interesting night and see some new stars in the making.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Never know. Thank you so much.
Stars. Thank you very
Cheers.
Much.
Cheers. Thanks for popping in. Bye-bye. Cheers.
From 10 till 1.
Mid-mornings with Phil Rowe.
So it's my guests in the studio, just getting their microphones ready to talk to me. In the studio with us today, Andrea Cockerton, with an early interview, which works out perfectly for them, along with Alex Elbro, who are from the Dowsing Sound Collective. Good morning, ladies. Nice to see you here.
Good morning.
We sort of worked out some source of music, which I think is probably the best way to start, Andrea. Before that, we'll just mention about the event, because you are the founder and sort of creative director of the organisation.
Yeah.
You've got a couple of tracks. We'll play one of them now before we go into the main interview. This, I think, will be sort of performing a cover of tomorrow.
We're not. Actually, this is one that we performed a cover of last year in a similar unplugged gig. So it's a really good representation of the kind of stuff we do. It's a beautiful track by The Temper Trap.
And this is how you sound. Thank you. you probably recognise that song. It was recorded by the Dowsing Sound Collective in Ely Cathedral last year.
That was in a college chapel, actually, and it's one of our favourite tracks, The Temper Trap. They just write such brilliant songs, and I think that's, there's some harmonies in that that we've done that we just adore, and everyone grins from ear to ear when they sing it. It's just, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
So, aptly named Quench, it's a pair of performances taking place tomorrow, actually, tomorrow afternoon, for a more family-friendly version at 5:30. And a more grown-up version at 8:30. Does it mean there's a little bit of language involved in the later one? Get a bit controversial as a collective?
No language. No, it's all... It's more that actually the venue's quite small. So because there are so many of us, we can only have a maximum of 400 people in the main chapel. And because there are about 120 performers, we've already taken up quite a large chunk. So we've done two gigs so that we can get everybody in that wants to come.
We're talking about the St. John's College Chapel. I'm actually surprised you can get 400 in there. It's a lovely venue. I've been there before and not listened to yourselves, but I know that the acoustics in there are very good.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful sounding building.
And you went along for a kind of technical rehearsal yesterday.
Yes, so we had a dress rehearsal last night. Yep. All in our full costumes and...
Oh, you're wearing costumes as well.
Well, when I say costumes,
kind of... It's not quite party frocks. Yeah. It's kind of people dress up. So it's like you're going to a party.
Rockstar bling.
That's
and the sparkliest shoes you can find.
This is what we're to expect tomorrow. I'll be coming along to examine
this. Look
out
for the shoes.
This is fascinating. How are the tickets selling so far?
Pretty well. We've pretty much... I think we've got about 10 tickets left for the main chapel in the evening and about... 50 in the afternoon. There's some then at the Antechapel, which is quite a way down the chapel. You can still hear because the sound rings through, but visibility is a bit of a way away. We've got some tickets left for both of those, both evening and afternoon.
Yeah, we sort of sat in the sort of choir area last time, which means that you sit sideways.
Yeah, on the pews. Yeah,
and you look to the left.
Yeah,
from where we were.
And they're also, you know, you might bring a cushion actually. That might, if you're coming in the evening or in the afternoon, sitting on the pews, bring a cushion because you might get a little bit sore.
That's a good hint. Yeah.
But we'll also have chairs.
But we have got chairs going across as well
down the middle,
so there'll be much better viewing, I think, than having a crick in your neck.
That's going to help. That'll be how you fit 400 people in.
It's going to be fabulous, isn't it?
So a lot of people will be winding up for that one, which is great. Now, this is not the first time you performed in Cambridge. The track we just heard then, was that?
That was Ely Cathedral. No, that was in another college chapel. And then we've done Corn Exchange twice, done the Corn Exchange three times. Ely Cathedral, which is a big, big, big gig, and from an acoustic perspective, that was a challenge. That's if you put a drum kit in Ely Cathedral plus a full back line of bass guitar, and I think we had keys, electric guitar, then that's an acoustical challenge for sure.
How many of you are performing tomorrow evening? You said it's been a bit of a squeeze yesterday in the rehearsal.
100 and singers.
Yep.
And then we have harpists, full strings.
Yep.
Full band. Organ,
hurdy-gurdy,
which, if you haven't seen, it's definitely worth just coming for the hurdy-gurdy alone.
Yeah, it is, absolutely, it's a
You're
highlight.
Explaining about the speed that the hurdy-gurdy man will be playing at.
Yeah, it's frenetic. So that's, we're covering a track by Vampire Weekend called Worship You, and it's the original that Vampire Weekend do. It's so fast, and you can't really work out the lyrics. We've done our best, but we'll be sort of on a par, I think.
But we'll be going full speed as well.
But they have some kind of instrument doing a solo, and we couldn't figure out what it was, and I was listening, and I thought, well, I wonder if a hurdy-gurdy would work. So did a bit of a shout-out. Does anybody know a hurdy-gurdy player? And Cambridge, being Cambridge,
a whole bunch of people knew
hurdy-gurdy players. And
I just think that would be very, very rare. So maybe the Cambridge Buskers and Street Performers Festival, I don't know. Was that what you sort of pick
I
one off the street?
I think to do with the Cambridge folk scene. It was a contact that came through you, Alex,
wasn't it? Yes, a friend of mine who sort of errs on the more classical side, I would say, and the thing she's involved in, she came up with his name, which is Dave.
Dave.
And said
Dave Holland.
That, and then his name kept coming up a few times, didn't it? Yeah. So with other people saying, have you tried him?
And he's just brilliant, because he came along to our... We had a big rehearsal last Sunday, and he said, I've never played anything like this before. He normally plays folk music or French, I guess, maybe French folk music. And it was just one of those moments you'll never forget, because we went straight into the track, and he was playing along with us singing, and then it goes into the hurdy-gurdy solo, and he just went for it, and his right arm was just going round and round and round, sort of pumping this around, and you could hear the applause about to build, and literally the second that he stopped,
everyone
just cheered. And it's, I don't know whether it's the best sort of response he's ever had, but there was 100 people just
100 plus, because we're in rehearsal time, so basically he walked into 100 people
all looking at him and all smiling and
yeah, really positive,
cheering. It's lovely.
So oh, it's that's fantastic. You know, so it's, yes, it's definitely an unusual instrument for a gig.
And Andrea, you were while we were playing that last track, you were reciting a little bit of the song Against the Hurdy-Gurdy, and you were going at a million miles an hour.
It is. Well, and when you get 100 people actually doing that, it is. There's a slight look of panic you can see on some of the singers' faces because it is so fast, but it's just part of the fun, actually.
So, Alex, your background with the Dowsing Sound Collective, how long have you been with?
So, I joined the choir a year ago, although it seems like I've always been there now. And it's a lovely thing to join, and a really big, great bunch of people. And about 6 months ago, when we did our Christmas gig, got to hear more about the DeSoco, the foundation part of the where we give parts of the profits to, and got really interested in that and just asked if I could help when any way I could with that, and so basically have helped this latest round of awards. Really,
we should explain DeSoco now. It's where the funds, I guess, will go to from tomorrow's takings on the door on the tickets. It's an organisation which is, well, I won't say splintered off from you, it's still very much part of you, but it's something that you Dowsing formed, wasn't it? And it's really to release some money in terms of grants, in a way, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. The first couple of gigs we did, we raised money for other local charities, and I was thinking it would be really good if we could actually support something musical, musically related. Mm. So it's a separate entity, but we're joined at the hip, really. And the sort of percentage of profits from our gigs and any collections we do and some other fundraising activity, we try and raise some money for DeSoco, and then we give out grants to local organisations or individuals that are using music for social good. So helping people, the rounds that we're announcing this time, we're supporting Cambridge Community Arts, which we're helping them buy some instruments to do lessons with adults with mental health issues. We're helping De Musica at Reach set up a choir for people with dementia. There's a brilliant project called Vision for Growth where they use tennis balls with, I think, bells in to help visually impaired people play tennis, so we're supporting them. Which
it's a bit like kettleball or something like that, I think, where there's a ball in it for visually impaired people and blind people.
Fantastic. Yeah, and fantastic. And then finally, Homerton's Children's Centre. There are staff working with children with special needs, and we're helping with some of the sort of musical training for them. So, you know, and this is all coming out from people coming to our gigs and people singing
in word of mouth as well. My background is in early years teaching as well, and when I heard about this, I know how much the power of music can do for children with special needs, or actually anybody. And so I was really keen to get involved, and it's something I feel, you know, very passionate about for that reason.
Isn't it nice that not only are you enjoying yourselves doing what you
do, absolutely,
making music, but also feeling that you benefit the community doing something like this?
Totally. It felt like it sort of completed the circle.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? We're having such an enormous amount of fun on stage and also while rehearsing, and it just completes that because it then does some good out of that as well. So,
and the feedback from some of the projects that have been, because it's only been going 18 months.
Yeah, this is the third round of funding.
So already getting a little bit of feedback from some of the past people.
Because it will take a while for the impact really to be felt, even after the money's been awarded.
Exactly, yeah. And we keep in touch with the people that we've awarded money to, and they let us know how they've got on.
And if they do any concerts or any anything like that, special days, they invite us. And it's been really lovely to see how that's made a difference from us enjoying ourselves, like you say.
And I'm sure you will tomorrow. I'm sure there'll be a smile on how many 100 faces tomorrow.
So, there'll be 100 singers, and I think it's around 15 musicians. So yes, it's a bit of a squeeze.
And you'll be announcing more of the DeSoco. The actual allocation money wise later on.
Yeah.
So we'll stay quiet on that one today and keep stum on that. We've only really got time now to play out, but give it one last big plug for tomorrow. So the event is called Quench. What was the idea of the overall title of Quench then, Andrew?
Well, originally it was going to be called Drench because we wanted to kind of drench people with...
It may be anyway.
That could have been the one. And then
drenched and then we'll have a quench, but there we are.
One of the singers then said, what about Quench? And Nina, who's our producer, and myself thought, quite like the sound of that, kind of quenching your ears. And of course it's been really hot, so it's worked really well for marketing for us because it's catching people's eyes. So it's just about sort of quenching your thirst for music, about your ears being quenched with great music. Sort of bit of a play on words, I guess.
Well, you look really ginned up and ready to go. The enthusiasm's coming across the studio here.
Thank you, it's great
to have you. And you're going to play out with one final track, but thanks very much to Alex Elbro and also to Andrea Cockerton there, who's the creative kind of, you set the whole thing up. It was your seed in the first place, Andrea.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So hopefully you'll come back and tell us more about some of
the things. We'd love
to. Planning something for Christmas? Presumably already working well ahead.
I'm not sure. We've done a couple of Christmas gigs and we couldn't get the venue that we wanted that was big enough actually for us this Christmas. So we're actually probably going to do a January gig and it's going to be in a very special venue. So we'll definitely come and tell you about that. So
watch this space.
Party. Yeah.
We'd love to see you.
Oh, yeah. And we're having our
5-year party.
Celebrating 5 years of the Down Syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've just celebrated our 5th year.
Oh, brilliant.
As well, this week, so there we are.
Oh, happy birthday. Yeah,
thank you. And happy birthday to you too.
Thank you very much.
5 years old, collectively, the royal we, all of us. So finally then, one more track to come. Would you like to introduce that?
Yeah, this is a cover of a track by Kings of Leon called Radioactive, and this was one that was recorded in Ely Cathedral. It's big, it's bold, and it just, I think, sums up the kind of energy and fun that happens on stage.
Thanks both for coming in today.
Thanks very much.
From 10 till 1,
mid mornings with Phil Rowe.
Cambridge 105.
We're catching up now with Rob Cockcut, who's back in the studio with me. I think it's about 4 or 5 months ago when we last saw Rob here on the Wednesday mid-morning show. And with him this morning, Jenny Connerty, who's actually recently been on the show as well. But they come together this time to talk about the latest project in Cambridge to try and get the co-housing off the ground. And I have to say that it's beginning to kind of levitate, isn't it? Slightly off the turf as we're beginning to get nearer to some fruition of this project. We're talking about Cambridge K1. Being part of Cambridge's first co-housing community, a unique opportunity in the making. Unique, isn't it, both? Who should we start with today? Rob, we'll start with you, because I think this is going to be the first one, if it goes, and it will, I'm sure, the blue touch paper has been be the first one in the country.
Good morning.
Right? Yes, good morning.
Yes,
Rob.
It's the first of its thoughts of its kind in the country. Yes, yes, definitely. It's been supported by the City Council, who own the land, and they've been very supportive all the way through. We now have a developer chosen called Townhouse, and they will be building houses made off-site in Sweden, in a specialist factory.
A sort of kit form, really, yeah?
It's a sort of a kit house, yes, but it's built to a very high environmental standard called Tisfulhus. So they'll be very warm in winter without much heating required at all. And environmentally friendly building materials as well.
So almost 0% sort of energy needed. There'll be some heating available in the house.
Hopefully with the solar panels on the roof, we will be almost carbon neutral, yes.
Yeah, carbon neutral and virtually sustainable, which is very good news as well. Mainly constructions of wood?
Yes, mainly wood grown in North Sweden.
So that would make it sort of hardwood. Because one thing I noticed, it's lovely to see houses nowadays and developments around Cambridge with clad in wood. But I do find that they fade very quickly. So they look rather aged, even though the wood's actually very sound. And you know, there's sort of places, I mean, there's some of it on Great Knighton and Trumpington Meadows and the new developments around the Addenbrookes Access Road. But, the aesthetic is good at first, and then when the colour goes, you think, oh, this is perhaps a little bit drab. I don't know whether it'll be the same for you, but I'm sure you'll have this wood all lovely, beautifully tantalised and preserved so that it's going to last for many, many years.
That sort of detail hasn't been decided yet. We may well have, in fact, we'll almost certainly have some wood cladding, but that sort of detail's where the owners to be are planning it. That's one of the great things about co-housing.
And there's a lot of artists involved. You know, there's a lot of people that got that inclination. So it's going to be beautiful. We've determined that it will be lovely.
So those people have got their names on the list. We should talk about this, where the co-housing is. So we're just off King's Hedges Road we're talking about here, bounded by the guided busway route just to the north of the site, isn't it? And King's Hedges Road is, if you like, to the south. And it's an allocated area of Orchard Park, which is available for you through through the City Council and working with them. That's what we're talking about as a project, aren't we? So those that have got their names down, and we'll ask people if they're interested later on to put their names down and how they could, where they can go to do this.
Please.
And Jenny, you're one of those, and Rob, you are another one, of course, and you're both planning to move in there, and maybe neighbours in the next, say, 18 months, which is really exciting. The news that now that you've now got a developer who's, if you like, signed up for this project, which is
really exciting. I mean, I've been a member for a couple of years. Rob's been beavering away for 15. And so, you know, I It's going to happen now. We know it's going to happen now.
I think, Rob, it's got to happen with all the sort of perspiration and frustration and everything else that's gone besides that's gone into this project. Mm. I know also you've been working with CAR, which is Cambridge Architectural Research, which are also based actually in our complex just over the yard from us here in Gwydir Street, where our studios are for Cambridge 105. So they've come up with the initial sort of drafts, plans of, you know, the height of the things, the sort of volume, how many toilets there would be on each floor.
Not quite that detail. No? What they got for us is outline planning permission for 38 dwellings, homes, and so they also helped us develop what we call the client brief, which is an outline of what the members want. So co-housing, as I said, is very much about the members planning it and running it, and it makes a huge difference. Yeah.
If listeners go to the site K1, Cambridge K1, they put Cambridge K1 in, or of course they could also go along with just putting in Cambridge co-housing, and that will get them to pretty much the same website. I can see it's not the little boxes concept. I hope it's not going to be anyway. I can see that each of those 38 dwellings presumably would be quite unique in terms of its colour scheme and how it sort of stands from the ground, its shape and its size. It's, I guess, a little less uniform. Is that really the concept?
Well, I think we'll all be getting what we need as a community, because that's what it's about, needs. Now, as you know, that's something that is becoming more and more rare for groups of people to share and help each other out. Things are becoming rather impersonal in our society, and what we want is to build a village of supportive neighbours and friends who will share our resource, any resource we have, whether it's cars or
lawnmowers.
So it takes it quite a bit further. It's almost, I say, something like a commune in a way?
It's better than a commune.
I was going to say, am I being fair by describing it like that?
It's a lot more privacy. The highest rate for privacy, higher than a conventional living.
So you're not going to be overlooking each other. The layout would be more in line, so you're not sort of, you're washing up and you can see your neighbour washing up or something.
Well, we might like that, but that's what we'll look, if that suits us in the design, then we'll go for it. But the idea is that we're meeting each other, opportunities to meet, because we also have this, the most unique thing about this is that we will also have a common house that we share for meetings. So it could be like the pub or the village hall or the post office, or, you know, that's where we'd be hanging out. And we're even trying to get the post delivered to this main building, aren't we, to encourage us to meet, because now we're all in cars and we don't talk to each other and we lose that important human connection. This is what's most important, I think, for me, certainly above all the other considerations, is community living, the old-fashioned village.
Walls have gone up between each neighbour, not because we intend to just necessarily cut up our neighbours, but we're all working a 9-to-5, we're away from home. Our neighbours are perhaps putting the washing out the weekend, and you might say hello, but you don't really know. I don't even next door but one these days. You might just about say hello to next door. Did you know your cat was in my garden again or something? But hopefully nice things you have to say to your neighbour. So I can very much see the point of this. And you could have your own little communal garden shed, I guess, where you could keep that communal lawnmower. So you'd be responsible for your own grounds, wouldn't you? A lot of modern, some number of years, you've had to pay ground rent if you do live in a flats complex, don't you? And you normally have a board of directors that would be elected as the overall kind of scheme runner, decide, you know, if a fence needed mending. But I suppose these things you could do for yourself, so you save a lot
of
money.
That's the plan.
The only thing I would say to that is, what happens if someone who has joined it, I don't want to put the cat among the pigeons here, but I am anyway.
Go on.
You know, sort of doesn't, in the eyes of everyone else, doesn't start to, shall we say, pull their weight over all of this and lives among you. You know, that's the only danger with this. I mean, hopefully I'd be a good citizen living with you and I would be litter picking.
Yeah, come join us.
Wow, I don't know. The only thing is, because I've got my own property, I think it would be unfair, because there are people in greater need, and I would love, you know, I want to see people who are in greater need getting a property like this and being able to integrate with all of you. So, you know, Cambridge is a friendly city, so it's lovely to be here. And especially on the north side, where they've got opportunities career-wise, whether it be Cambridge Regional College for younger people, because that, you know, students within the family unit, and of course the Science Park, where you can get some jobs as well. So it's a lovely placement for it. Was the site actually got for you by the City Council? Was there a pin in the map and said, this is where you would be? Or did you manage to decide this, Rob?
Well, what happened is all of Orchard Park was sort of assigned for development, and they labelled it from the west A1 and all the way through where near the east side, where K1, that's just the K1.
That's where K1 came from.
That's okay. Where it comes from.
Right.
And a developer was signed up to build conventional houses on it. Then the market crashed in 2008.
Yes.
The developer pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Hill, who is promoting co-housing on a national basis, approached the City Council, said, here's this proposition. They accepted it. And one thing led to another. We're now in the stage where we're doing the final plans on what we're actually going to build there.
Wouldn't it be nice if Cambridge was first on the map to do this? It does really look like it's going to happen now.
Obviously, yes.
We say that we're lifting up out of the recession, things are getting better. Now that you've got a developer on board, obviously there's some confidence now back to get this all sorted out. So everyone would get to choose their interiors, would they? The colour of the walls, the colour of their sinks and suites and baths, and
I think a lot of us will be going for to live in a thrifty way, so that we probably buy in bulk sort of internal things, and that would be the whole nature of the
community. We hold regular meetings where we talk about everything that needs to be decided,
nuts and bolts of the thing,
hundreds of little decisions that need
plumbing
to be made.
Electrics
you get a lot of savings if you come to a group consensus and buy in bulk.
The type of windows you might have, or doors, or is that part of the sort of construction that the Swedes will be sending over to you with the doors?
They'll have some influence on that sort of stuff.
And environmentally, probably you wouldn't be using sort of slate tiled roofs again for whatever the Swedes would be coming up with in terms of...
Well, personally, I'm hoping that the solar panels will form the...
The ridges,
roof.
Yeah.
Yes, so...
In the entire, so they would become the roof structure as well as...
Yeah, well, the south-facing, the north-facing would have to be sort of matching.
And again, for public transport, you're fairly well accommodated there. There's a guided busway stop near the Cambridge Science Park, or if it's not actually called the Cambridge Science Park, so it'll get you into Cambridge. The new to open spur that extends the guided busway past you and beyond towards the new Chesterton Station, or the Science Park Station, as it's going to be called, the old Chesterton Junction that was on the railways.
Yes.
And that's the development, although that's delayed, that has started as well. But I guess one of the things you'll be building in is something like a cycle compound as well. So you have, you're going to try and be as eco as you can, so you can walk. The other thing, Orchard Park, how's it developed as a site generally? Are there local shops now available around that area? Is there a news agent?
Yes, a few.
A little bit sparse on that side at the moment.
I say that because I've heard that said by some people that have moved in there. Are there other developments to come apart from your co-housing?
I believe so, yes.
So it's still to burgeon a bit more, which could mean that you could get some more, let's hope, some more facilities in that part of Cambridge, and it's much needed, as we say. At the moment, when I last saw you, Rob, 15 names are on your list. You need, obviously you want to get occupancy for 38. Including families?
It may actually be 40. There are quite a few families. We're looking for quite a few more members. There's still plenty of place. It's a big commitment for people to make. You know, moving house is a big deal. And it's only going to happen in about 14 to 18 months' time. So...
And people need to plan ahead, because if they're going to move out of their existing property, they may be renting, of course.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
Notice to landlords. And some people will be moving in who own their own property for whatever reason would be...
Quite a few, yes.
...finding their circumstances changing, or just feel that this is a better concept for them rather than... It's a great, great venture, and I'm glad that here at Cambridge 105 we're keeping up with you as it moves along. And we'll have to come down to the first digging out... As the foundations are laid, send a reporter up to you. And when you're topped out too.
Yes.
You know, when the first resident moves in, because it's going to be, I would say the eyes of the media around the country will be focusing on you when the big day comes, which hopefully is not going to be too many months away. Just finally, if people are interested, you've got an open evening, which will be on the 30th of July, so that's next Thursday evening at 7 p.m. At Orchard Park. Where will that be exactly on site if people want to come along and find out more?
That'll be at the Orchard Park Community Centre, So between 7 and 9, we'll be doing a meet and greet, and we'll be talking about what co-housing is. The developer will be introducing himself, and then we'll have a question and answer session, and then at 9 o'clock we'll move on to the K1 site itself for a little sort of evening picnic.
It's great. Well, the evenings are still light, and you'll have some plans and drawings and the outline for everyone to see as well.
They're lovely. Very nice.
I can see a lot on the website to show this, show us that, actually. So it's Cambridge K1.co.uk is the website where people can find out more. You've had a recent revamp of the website too. Looks very good.
Yes.
Lots of information there to remind you of this event as well, this open evening, which will be coming up this Thursday. Thank you both for coming in. I'm sure Jenny will be one of the first occupants to get the keys.
Oh, that would be nice.
For 18 months' time. She's sitting here all excited, listener.
I am.
Just looking like you're ready for Christmas Day, and it's Christmas Eve, Jenny. It was fantastic. Rob, you've worked so hard on this.
Well
you know,
done.
Our fingers crossed for you. And
thank you.
You know, it's nice to see some support from the community, and I'm sure this will benefit for many, be a solution for many, many people to help just a little bit towards the housing
and a model for the future, because the villages, where are they now? They're not functioning like they used to, but this would.
And bring back some community spirit. So let's see. Let's hope that happens. Well done. Thank you both for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Afternoons with Andy and Christian.
I'm joined in the studio by Marcus Conyers, who is the founder for the Centre of Innovative Education and a co-developer of graduate degree programmes in brain-based training. He is an author of 20 books, the most recent of which is called Positively Smarter, Science and Strategies for Increasing Happiness, Achievement and Well-being, and it's just launched in the UK with Wiley Blackwell. He grew up in Cambridge and is here in the UK to talk about the book with me and to row in the town bumps, which are going on this week. I went last night and it was extremely exciting. So exciting, in fact, that I had too much PIMS because I needed to calm my nerves. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Christian. Thanks for having me.
You are very welcome. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Glad to hear it. So we'll talk about the bumps, I think.
Yes.
Is it exciting to be back again? So you're back nearly every year, aren't you, for the bumps?
I am, actually, and this is actually the 40th anniversary of my first time rowing in the bumps.
The 40th anniversary?
Yes. So it's wonderful to be back and to experience the event.
Yeah, yeah.
And a quick story. What I didn't realize is that by starting rowing when I did that 40 years ago, I was actually giving my brain a great benefit that I'm enjoying today, later in life.
Of course, yeah. So let's talk about some Cambridge life to begin with. So you were born in Cambridge?
Yes,
educated here.
I was actually born in London, and I grew up in Cambridge, and I actually went to Impington Village College here, which was
same school as me.
Absolutely,
yeah. Fantastic. And did you go to school with my dad? Is that correct? Or were you a few years younger? I think we'll say you're a few years younger.
Oh, thank you very much. you can ask him later. But, actually, I met your dad at the rowing club when we all started rowing years back, and he was the DJ, so he was a very popular
person. I've heard this. I find it hard to believe now.
And in fact, I told him he has shaped my whole view of music, and he felt rather concerned about that.
He's responsible for everything you're listening to now.
Yes, he is.
And he must accept that. So you've come back to Cambridge, as you say, nearly every year.
Yes.
Which I think is fantastic. And you now, of course, live in Florida.
Yes, absolutely.
Whereabouts? Is it Sarasota?
Yes, I actually live in Sarasota in a little place on Siesta Key.
Fantastic.
Which is a great place to, you know, research and write books. Yep. And pretty much that's what I'm spending my time doing. But I love to come back to Cambridge.
Yeah. And you did some work with Cambridge University.
Yes,
I'd like to touch on that briefly.
Sure. We were presented at the at a conference about innovation and implementation last year, and we were actually the only Americans in the group. So all the rest was from across the UK. And what
so
was
you've got to represent the nation well.
Yes, I did. I did. And my city of Cambridge as well.
Of course.
And what was fascinating was that the very challenges that we have in the US are exactly the same as what's happening in the UK.
Sure.
So it was great to see that we're all looking for similar solutions to similar problems. And that the same things really that work in the US also work in the UK.
Yeah. So it's quite reassuring in a way, I suppose.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. I want to talk about, or if you could talk about some examples, potentially in your early life, which now that you look back on them, you'd think, perhaps without you realising at the time, of course, have shaped the way you view your research now. Yes. Perhaps from your time at Impington or in Cambridge or, you know.
That's a great question, Christian. Well, I was thinking back to my time in Impington, because whenever I come back to Cambridge, these memories come back from years ago.
Sure.
And I remember when I'd be revising at Impington in the sixth form, and I'd spent a couple of hours a night trying to remember stuff.
Mm.
But I'd also sneak out and watch a little bit of Monty Python's Flying Circus, which was very popular at
of
the
course.
Time. And the fascinating thing was the next day, I completely deleted any memory of my homework that was gone completely.
Yeah.
But literally everybody in school could actually give you chapter and verse on the Monty Python script from the night before.
Yeah.
And a light bulb went on for me. So why is it that when I'm trying to study my homework or if I'm in a class, I tend to forget it, but can remember literally word for word this very complex structure of a Monty Python script? And that's part of the reasons I became fascinating about how people really learn and how we can help all people learn more efficiently.
Sure. And Monty Python, of course. do you know, I watched fairly recently, which film is it there? The Life of Brian, I think it
yes.
is. No, sorry. And now for something completely different.
Yes.
And it has the most extraordinarily long title sequence I think I've ever seen. And it's so visual, but I think that's sort of what you're talking about. You remember it, and you remember that those stock visual images from it.
Well, and it's also interesting because when you connect it to the brain research, which for my sins is what I'm fascinated yeah. about, there's four things that really happen in Monty Python. You think about it. So now for something completely different, novelty is incredible for the brain
yes.
and mind to remember. And then challenge. When you're watching Monty Python, you have to really keep up because you never know which way the joke is
sure.
going to go.
Yeah.
And then the next thing is, the next day you have feedback because you're sharing it with your friends, which helps embed it in the mind. And so if you bring those things together, you've got a great way for learning anything. And also you practice because you don't just tell the joke once. You tell it over and over again.
Yeah.
So again, we can see how things in the real world, there are some times when we learn effortlessly and do really well, and other times when we don't. So my time back in Cambridge really sort of set me on that mission about trying to work out why we learn well sometimes and not others.
Sure. Tying into that, creativity. In the book, I know that's a big theme, and I know for you personally
yes.
it's a area of fascination for you. I want to talk about the idea that I think particularly in England is a real, I suppose it's a stigma really, that people are born creative or they're not.
Right.
And I think in your book, I think you challenge that perception. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's really interesting because, again, growing up in England, with the idea was you're either creative or you're not. And actually my father, who was at Footlights, was in... So my family in England was divided between the creatives and the medical doctors.
Sure.
So it was like, you know, the Sharks and the Jets. It was these two completely different groups. And so it was largely...
Forever fighting each other, yes.
So the idea was you're either creative or you're not. And again, working in the United States, as we spoke about a little bit earlier, go into the classrooms, and there are so many kids who have these blank expressions throughout,
yeah.
you know, but give them something creative to do, and they suddenly come to life and they learn much more efficiently. So what the research shows now is two really significant things. Is one is that creativity and creative skills are really a set of learnable things,
mm-hmm.
that one's not just necessarily dramatically creative at birth. So what we're now learning is you can learn to become more creative over your life. Just give example of my mother, Hazel Powell, who didn't start really doing her art and her creativity till later in her life. Obviously, I can't reveal her age on air.
Never.
And so she had this experience, and I shared with her about the importance of novelty, challenge, practice, and feedback as a way to help your brain become more creative. And she applied it. And she was really nervous when she first did her first piece of art. But now, over time, she's become a really good artist.
Yeah.
In fact, her art is hanging up in various places across
Fantastic.
Cambridge. So she's a great example. And just a little story about her. And I said, well, what was it like when you were trying to do art in school? And she said that one day somebody said, you're not very good at art. And she felt the shutters come down.
Of course, yeah.
But she overcame it. So much of it is developing your confidence and really having a go at becoming more creative.
Yeah.
And the more you practice, the better you get.
I'm proving that any time in your life...
Absolutely.
So there's no excuse, people. Okay.
There really isn't any excuse.
There's no excuse.
Yes.
You're not you know, you can't just sit at home, watch TV, okay, and just say, I'm not creative, get to an art class.
And the fact is that human beings are surviving because we are creative.
Mm.
It's about solving novel problems in different situations. And just another thing we spoke about a little bit earlier is how important creativity is. So a lot of studies have been done now, and for major companies around the world now, creativity is one of the most important things that they're looking for.
Oh, really?
So it's much, much in high demand.
Yeah, yeah. And that's interesting because I think a lot of people, I think especially over here, to be honest, would be surprised by that. I know I was surprised when you first said that to me, because you think of business and creativity as two separate
right.
entities, do you not?
Well, and it's interesting because up until a few years ago, if you grew up in a country, you were really only competing with people, you know, within your own country.
Sure.
But now, with the digital revolution, there are 2 billion more people competing for all the jobs. And jobs that can be turned into sort of an analog
yep.
can be turned into something that the computers can do, or lower cost smart people from around the world.
Sure.
So the one edge, and Britain and America actually lead the world at it, is really on honing and developing these creative skills.
All about the city.
Cambridge 105.